Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Inside information on your teams, honest opinion, and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
On a roll, the ups and downs of a hump day. It is Paul Ihander here.
Rolling!
That's Lindsey Brown.
Rolling down the river!
Look at that.
Yeah, I don't know who sings it, but it's in my brain.
Proud Mary.
Who?
Big wheels keep on turning.
Something keep on burning. Rolling, rolling, rolling down the river. Riverboat Tom. Needs to mix in a few glasses of water. Oh, true! See, this is why I'm so glad that you're here, Paul, to explain what's in my brain.
Not explain, just, you know what? Yeah, maybe interpret more than anything.
There we go. A translator of sorts.
Right.
Yeah, it's very necessary.
You drop Winnie the Pooh references in the middle of something totally random, then, you know.
It's important.
Sure.
Yeah, it's an important reference. It's what makes us unique and New Yorkish.
Well, if Winnie the Pooh never wore pants.
That's true.
And we are wearing pants today because we're in studio.
Correct. And besides, legally, we are required to.
Well, besides the fact that we have to take a survey before we walk into the building every time we come in.
What does it say?
It says, do you have a fever?
No.
Do you have a loose stool?
No. Not today.
Are you coughing?
Thank you for checking.
Are you coughing?
Yeah.
Have you visited anywhere else besides Nevada in the last 14 days?
No. Have you come into contact with anyone who has been outside of Nevada? No.
Right.
We are keeping the bubble tight, Paul.
Answer lots of no's is basically what it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we get to sit here in the studio.
Yes.
Socially distant, but we do get to sit here in the studio.
The sacrifice we make to look into each other's eyes on a daily basis.
And to entertain all of you.
Yes.
You're
welcome.
Who are doing what you do and hanging out with us.
Yes.
And we do appreciate it. Big show coming down the pike today. Lots of news about your Vegas Golden Knights, as well as the Las Vegas Raiders. We will also dig into the idea of the purpose of the national anthem before events.
Mm.
And there was a big boat parade today in Tampa.
We haven't heard.
Yes, it was.
So he said, Tom needs to probably mix in a couple of waters. I mean, he's probably going to be in pain tomorrow regardless. But just to make it from like a 10 to a 7, you know, that 3-point bump sometimes when you're hungover means the world.
Yes. Tom Brady had a few signature drinks, probably mostly named after him.
Yes.
At this point.
Mostly.
But it was a good time in Tampa. We'll talk about that here in about 10 minutes. So let's get you the five biggest stories of the afternoon.
It's your daily checkdown, powered by Radio.com Sports, number one.
Okay, so when there are statements issued by the National Hockey League about your local team, you tend to pay attention.
Yes.
One of its players, it's referring to the Vegas Golden Knights, returned a positive test for COVID-19 as the Golden Knights' one-year signee, Tomáš Nosek, was removed from last night's game, and we know why, because he is tested positive for COVID.
Yeah. Still don't know why we're just getting these results during the game, but, you know, they just announced this. They had no media availability after last night's win. They won that game last night, Paul, 5-4, and because they were waiting for the league, because the league has taken over these decisions, and apparently we're playing tomorrow. It's going to be fine, right?
Second verse, same as the first. This time, though, it does involve Nosek, as Pietrangelo comes off the list yesterday and skates with the team. Nosek goes on the list officially as of this afternoon. As Lindsey mentioned, they will play game two between the Knights and the Ducks.
Ducks practice today. We did not.
Yes. The facility was closed today out of an abundance of caution. And we'll see if this changes here in the next 24 hours.
That's true.
You know, we're just kind of at the mercy of what's happening.
Time is a social construct, and we are are not the ones in charge
with COVID. They have pulled two players. The Knights have recalled two players from the Knights, and they're joining the taxi squad. That is Tyrell Goulborn and Carl Dahlstrom.
Right on. Got to replenish the well there because, you know, we've had Coughlin up with the group who had his first assist last night, his first NHL point. And Nick Holden, who played a ton of minutes last night because Shea Theodore was missed a good bit of the game, was taken out in the second period after sustaining an injury in the first.
Yeah, so that was an owie. We have not heard much about him today at all.
So we need bodies. We don't know who's going to be available. And so you just got to make sure that you don't have to do more paperwork than you need to at this current point in time. So we just call up from the smaller stable, Paul.
Golden Knights COVID Part 2.
Number 2.
All right, interesting report coming out of our sister station in Pittsburgh. The one of the shows out there does a interview segment with longtime NFL writer and reporter John Clayton, formerly of ESPN. Everybody knows who John is. He mentioned that the Las Vegas Raiders are a team at the front of the pack in terms of the interest levels in a current Pittsburgh Steelers receiver.
So all the receivers from the state of Pennsylvania just want to come on down to our town, huh?
Apparently so. Apparently the Raiders have pretty much the highest interest in acquiring Juju Smith-Schuster.
Why?
Well, there would be a big price tag or larger price tag.
Yeah.
He's a talent. Else. There is no doubt about it. But you're talking about a team that has some space.
Don't we need fortification in other areas other than the ones that catch the ball?
Well, it's about having a clear number one. And so can you bring back Nelson Agholor, or do you move on to a Juju Smith-Schuster, who is clearly a game changer and can play and can catch balls? That's what it is. And it seems like the Raiders are positioned to rearrange the salary, their books in terms of finances.
Sure.
Because there are a handful of players that can be cut with no cap money because all the guaranteed money's been paid.
Yeah. But or this could be a deal that enables another deal, Paul.
That's true. There's a lot of moving parts. But again, a very interesting report that Clayton suggests that the Raiders should be going to move on the idea of acquiring Juju Smith-Schuster.
Like I said, he's a talent, but I would just think there would be other areas that we would need to address first. But like I said, we are also, I think, at the front of the line of definitely not trading Deshaun Watson, says the Houston Texans, but that is a name that could help make a deal like that a little bit easier to happen.
Well, since Derek Carr's brother came out and said the Raiders have taken calls on his brother,
yep,
and they've said no, but Ian Rappaport of NFL.com talks about Marcus Mariota perhaps becoming Ryan Tannehill, who replaced Marcus Mariota in revitalizing his career and seeing him as a starting quarterback option.
He looked really good in the game that he played after returning from an injury. He missed most of the season, but when Carr went down, he looked pretty damn good. So put that on tape. I'm sure there are a few teams that are looking either for maybe a spot starter or a depth guy to challenge somebody who needs a little more pushing.
We'll see where this all heads.
We shall see.
Clayton suggests that Smith-Schuster be great underneath because Henry Ruggs is going to go long every time, and Darren Waller just kind of catches everything thrown at him.
That's true.
He's pretty much like an exterminator for rodents and vermin.
Yeah.
He just kind of catches everything. Tell me where the ball is. I'll just go get it.
Yeah, and I mean, the Steelers have to find a way to keep paying Ben Roethlisberger since he offers them so much.
That's a big question mark. Roethlisberger talked about redoing his deal, but it may not be enough.
The deal
it may not
anymore.
Be enough at this point.
They gotta start figuring out who the next one is at some point, right? Does he really give you that much to sacrifice another year?
Mason Rudolph.
DJ Watt's fine. He'll just be in his prime for forever, right? It's fine.
Sure.
It's cool.
Yeah, that's a lot of teams dealing with that kind of issue. So, Juju Smith-Schuster, the latest name to be linked to the Raiders.
Number 3.
MLS is coming back.
Yay!
But due to COVID, they're going to push things back.
Huh.
They're going to add a couple of weeks to the start date, where they're going to start in the middle of April now instead of at the beginning of April, because they're trying to get their Canadian teams into the fold because of stay-at-home orders in place where they have the three clubs, Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver.
They're taking it very seriously north of the border, Paul.
Yeah, so last year they played in Orlando, right? They did the bubble in Orlando and played down there, but this year nobody seems to want the bubble anymore.
Yeah.
And so they want to make sure that they can get some soccer games playing, because if there's any, and they avoided, the thing is, we talked about them last week, they avoided the labor strife. They came to a deal literally after our show ended on Friday, Mm-hmm. And so they're happy for like another 7 years. So they're going to try to keep their momentum going, what they do have, and try to, you know, capture, you know, something in this kind
of. Well, they keep adding teams.
Area.
So it's like there's a debut with Austin FC, really dug deep for that that name.
Well, they didn't want to go with the Stars.
Exactly. But, you know, just like most sports that are not the NFL, very, very much a hand-to-mouth operation. The almighty dollar dictates a lot of the decisions. And so maybe it's just kind of a punch for the a couple of weeks, and then we'll see where we're at more likely, I would think.
Yeah, probably like Orlando and the Houston teams will all be playing home games, and everyone will just go visit them for a while until they can figure it out.
You think like the Canadian teams would maybe do what we've seen the Raptors do, we've seen the Blue Jays do, where they're down in the United States, because it's just, I don't think if they come visit Orlando or Houston, that Canadians be like, come on in, guys, welcome home.
Sure.
You're
looking at touring teams, though, for Canada, because when you talk about basketball courts, easy to find basketball courts. A little easier to find baseball stadiums, but when it comes to soccer pitches,
yeah,
a little bit.
And still wintertime in a lot of this country.
Correct. When you're talking about playing, I watched a game when I lived in Denver. I watched the Colorado Rapids play in a freaking snowstorm. It was ridiculous.
It's the worst.
It was 55 degrees at kick. And then about at half, it got cold, and we were with jackets and we got stuff on. It started snowing. And like, what is happening here?
That's the worst. At least they don't have to use their hands. Have you golfed when it's snowing? That's a whole different thing. That stinks.
Only rain, no golf.
Yeah. So, well, this is good then. The season's still on. It's just not on the time that we thought it would be.
Yeah, they're giving COVID a little space.
Good. We all should.
Little space.
Number four.
All right, if you're a glutton for punishment and you love the Olympic Games, which apparently will happen, you can get your butt out of bed early on as NBC has announced that the opening ceremonies from Tokyo, Japan on July the 23rd will be broadcast live across all time zones, which means those of us here in Las Vegas will need to wake up at 4 a.m.
This is a 24-hour town, Paul. We're not even sleeping yet.
4 a.m. to watch them light the torch.
Live.
Live.
Because they are going to replay it, you know, back in prime time for those of us that want to still keep our regular 9-to-5 circadian rhythm naturally moving. But I kind of like stuff when it's done live, though, too. Because once it's not, the moment is technically passed.
Yeah, I get that, but I had a hard enough time getting into Korean baseball at 2:30 in the morning.
That's true.
I mean, seriously.
And to be honest, the opening ceremony really won't be that much different than it usually is. Besides, you know, the crowd's not going to be there, but it's mostly just people just waving. And the contingency from the Republic of China. Hello!
Right.
Hello!
Right, you always get the explanation why Greece gets to go first.
Yes. Yep. Are the Russians allowed to compete under their own flag this time?
No, they're the athletes under the
Federation of Russia.
It's the Olympic. They have to compete under the Olympic.
That's
rings.
Right. The Olympic athletes from Russia.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The Olympic
athletes
from Russia.
Let's not
really
cheat.
They're OAR.
Let's not cheat at our own games. Like literally, let's not have a back room. Icarus, watch that documentary if you haven't. It's on Netflix.
So the first medals will be awarded Saturday, July 24th. So if you're really into the Olympics, they will do 18 hours of Olympic programming and 22 hours on July the 23rd, like all day. All day.
Yeah, Tirico is going to be basically going from the NHL playoffs straight there.
Yeah.
Because it's all the Emmy, and we know like that's who does the Stanley Cup coverage.
Yes, NBC.
Yeah. We're gonna find out. Is Al Michaels going to be there with both of his pink eyes? Remember that? Sochi?
Oh, my goodness.
Like, are you okay? It wasn't Al. It was Kostas.
Kostas, yeah.
Yeah,
no,
that was bad.
Rubbing your eyes, dude.
Yeah, that's seriously. Double pink eye, literally.
Ah, what is that? Hot sauce.
Yeah.
Oh, no, don't rub your eye.
Oh,
dude.
That was the Winter Olympics in a summer town in Russia.
Yes, Sochi.
Mm.
Sochi with the
2014
unfinished toilets.
Correct.
Number five.
All right, as Lindsay referenced yesterday, they were actually on a boat today.
Andy!
With T-Pain. Well, at least it looked like it with Gronk. Gronk's boat was the party boat, apparently.
I'm shocked, aren't you?
Yeah, that was the party boat.
I, for one, am shocked.
He's got it going on. The groupies that he had on his boat, or friends, or family. It doesn't look like family. It looks like he may have his brothers there.
Well, Camille's there.
Yeah. They're
soulmates.
They were throwing down for sure, and throwing back as well.
Yeah. Tom needs an IV.
Tom threw the Lombardi trophy from boat to boat.
Yeah.
It was he threw it to Cameron Brate, actually.
Yeah.
So it wasn't Gronk. It was actually Cameron Brate. So apparently Cameron Brate and Gronk look alike.
Well, it's tough to tell with the sunglasses, the shirts off, and the bruise of flowing. We're just hoping for a pair of hands to grab that. Doesn't matter who.
And
so it was a risk.
Scotty
does.
No, the Scotty, what's his name? The receiver for the punt returner for the Tampa Bay. Anyway, he threw Chris Godwin's phone in the water.
Oh, man.
So Chris actually made a plea to the cell phone company, of which he has the subscription to, and said, I need a new phone.
Yeah, we need to document this today.
Scotty threw my phone in the water.
That's the worst. Just throw it in a bowl of rice.
Yeah, and then the teams could actually join them, apparently. You could go on the river, and they had to stay 50 feet away from the boats. That was not happening.
Yeah, the dinghies were not followed.
They tried.
Yeah. But like I said, Tom, if you haven't seen the tweet, go see it. The video of him basically being weekend at Bernie's.
Like, that's a good way to put it.
Like, because he's just had a few too many cocktails. You know, he's 43 years old. He's trying to keep up with the boys, keep up with the kiddos in their 20s. And I don't think the party's done yet, considering it's 6:15 p.m. there right now.
He was already lit when he threw the trophy.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
He's all
We've escalated since then, though. Because that's like right before. That's right before you break the seal, probably, Paul. And then after that, is downhill from there.
So listen, they were Disney-fied 24 hours ago. Today was a little bit more of an adult celebration in Tampa, Florida, as we close the book on Super Bowl LV, the Buccaneers Boat Parade. And that is your check down, powered by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. All right, coming up next, last night, the Knights got a win over Anaheim, but was it a true gong show or actual resilience by this team? We'll talk about that next.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul Iandra, Lindsey Brown with you on this Wednesday afternoon. I do want to remind you tonight we do have the Nevada Basketball Coaches Show. That is at 6 o'clock for those of you who need yet another college basketball fix as we wrapped up five straight nights of college hoops.
Sweet!
We are back in the saddle again today after a Vegas Golden Knights victory, 5-4, in which I increased my wealth ever so slightly with
Mark. It expanded?
Well, Marc-Andre Fleury made 19 saves. That was just enough.
It was just enough.
Just enough.
Just barely enough.
To where the start of that game looked like it was going to be a walk in the park, and then the Ducks. It wasn't.
They started quacking, Paul.
It wasn't the boring hockey that I had warned about yesterday, but it was that a little bit of
complacency.
Okay, I'll take that. Because after that first period, watching that first period, and I was able to catch some of the feed out of the Anaheim feed as opposed to the Knights feed on television, there were lots of cutaway shots to dejected looks on the Anaheim Ducks bench after that kick-in goal, essentially, the second goal of the
game. Those are tough.
And they were like, what can you do? What can we do? We can't do any more at this point. That third period obviously helped, but it felt like, you know, they just dug a hole that they weren't going to be able to get out of despite, you know, how hard they tried late.
Well, Ryan Miller was playing really well, too. It was either, you know, the Golden Knights kept shooting to his glove or he was just cutting down those angles. But he gave him a chance to win. And you're absolutely right. It wasn't a boring hockey game, but it wasn't the sharpest game either because, you know, the Knights are a third period team. That's usually when we see their best hockey. It's usually them making the monumental comeback. But they rested on the lead a little bit, kind of what they did in the first game that was the first game of the season, where they got off to a big lead in the first period, took a little napsy, and then, you know, the Ducks fired right back. It was just more of like a more drawn out version of that. And it's tough because it's easy to kind of get lulled to sleep on some of the goals that they were scoring because the one that Alex Tuck collected from Cody Glass, that was a really good play with the backhand that beat Ryan Miller far side bar down. It's like that's a shot you're just like, oh, if you can hit that, good for you. It shouldn't probably go in, but if you can hit that spot, that is the spot to hit.
That was Waz's goal too.
But Waz is different because his was against the boards, basically. It was a really bad angle shot, and to get beat far side, blocker side, that's really tough. And so it wasn't like Ryan Miller was like on his stuff, but he was answering the call in big time moments. But you're absolutely right. It was a different Ducks team after that redirect went off of Marshy's skate in front of the net. Because it's just sometimes when you throw things on the net, good things happen if you have bodies in front of them. So it was just they were lucky to escape with the win, and especially with how they had to kind of reallocate their minutes and their talent late in that third period, because we lost Shea Theodore I think it was in the second period, and because he went out and skated around, but then they took him off the ice, and then we obviously lost Tomas Nosek because he had a positive COVID test. And so you're relying on the legs of your more experienced players to kind of help carry the load, but you have to give them breaks as well. But then you're asking your young guys to step up in big moments and against really big time players, that sometimes it just, you're a little bit out of your depth sometimes, because guys are getting lost high in our own defensive zone a lot, and kind of, you know, legs straight up, kind of coasting, like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be here. I'm supposed to be in the middle covering and helping support the D. And all it takes is a split second of apprehension, and that's enough for like Ryan Getzlaf to be left, you know, right out in the middle.
This is going to be one of those weird kind of moments I'm going to put out there, and you can laugh me off the planet right now, because it, again, this is the most amazing hypothetical right now. But if you were to lay down MVPs, if Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and Mitch Marner were not playing at the level
Matthews considered too.
Right, but Matthew's stats are good, but then you look at Stone's numbers in terms of assists, they're right up there in terms of production, in terms of just where he is on the ice. He would be a legitimate MVP candidate right now.
Yeah, he absolutely has to be in the discussion. He absolutely has to be in the discussion. And like we kind of talked about yesterday, he's only had one game where he's been held off the score sheet. It was that 1-0 win that Carlson scored in the waning moments against the Arizona Coyotes a couple of weeks ago. And he just does everything so well, and that line is moving so well. You know, Chandler Stephenson, that you said you wanted to see more offensive output from him. Well, guess what? He brought it.
Yeah, bingo.
He brought it. And for him to be getting that confidence, for him to be raising the bar on that level of speed, you know, this is a team that can if the D make a good play high in their defensive zone and get the puck turned over, they can hit that guy or hit Mark Stone in the neutral zone and then spring someone like Chandler Stephenson, just like bang, bang. But it's not something that you can necessarily rely upon, especially when your bench starts to shorten up and when your legs start to get tired. Guess what happens to your head? You start making some more questionable decisions. And the Golden Knights had a lot of pucks taken away from them last night. The Ducks had 15 takeaways.
There were a lot of turnovers. There was some slop for sure.
Yeah, and that's to be expected. They cannot play, you know, perfect night in and night out, but it's just about making sure that you're starting to mitigate those mistakes as they started to compound, because in that second period, they didn't play very well either. Even though they were scoring goals, like the shot totals were it was not usually where we would see the Golden Knights, where it's like a really big disparity between their number of shots and the Ducks. It's very much even. It was just the Knights were converting on theirs.
Anaheim, we play them again on Thursday, and then we have the Sharks in Colorado back to back in the weekend. Because it was a 5-4 game, and we're seeing again 4-3, I don't want to get too much into the scores because we know this team's winning games. Is it the idea that because the Ducks, a team like the Ducks, doesn't have like this superstar stud on the ice, does it make it more challenging for a game plan against a team like that? Because you're getting it from so many different players.
Yeah.
A guy's got 2 goals. Another guy's got 3 assists. Another guy's got 3 goals or 2 goals. It's like the amping up against, you know, the top flight, you know, this is where the puck's going to be flow.
Right.
The flow is going
to
go.
You don't have anybody to key in on.
Okay, precisely.
Yeah, and it does, because it puts the onus on all of the lines. It doesn't just mean that, you know, you're relying on your top line to shut down the other team's top talent. It means that everybody has to be ready to go and has to be minding their assignments, because the third line, which we also talked about needing to have a big game, did have a really big game offensively. You had a goal from Alex Tuck. You had a goal from Nick Waugh. Cody Glass is averaging almost a point per game right now. Like, that's always been where the separating factor for the Golden Knights has been against their competition, because best on best cancel out, but our third lines are usually far and away better. But the thing is that as good as Alex Tuck is playing, as good as that line has been playing, they were the ones mostly on the ice for that third period collapse. Not really collapse, but they missed some of their assignments. And you know what? It's going to happen, because they're still young guys. Alex Tuck is being asked to be a leader on that line, and sometimes he plays exactly like you're supposed to, where he's driving the play, he's taking initiative, he's playing the full sheet of the ice. But like I said, all it takes is a split second where Alex is just floating a little bit too high in the defensive zone looking for a pass instead of being down low. And once the defenseman that he's, you know, floating towards realizes that and steps down, that's where you end up with that goal where Marc-Andre Fleury makes an unbelievable save backdoor. The rebound gets put behind the goal line, and then the guy just walks straight out. No, everybody's like, I'm defending. Zach Whiteclaw goes out to take away the shot. But everybody else is watching because they're on their heels at that point. And that's because that guy's not supposed to be there. That guy's not supposed to have all his time and space to move. But these are the learning opportunities that you have for the season that you can take going forward and helps, you know, really reinforce that idea. You have to be on the entire time. Even if you're scoring, Alex, you got to do it the next shift.
5-4, Golden Knights get the win over Anaheim. A little nail-biter there towards the end. They move on again. We are going to play tomorrow, despite Tomas Nosek's COVID case, positive case. He's the only one between the two teams. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about the renaissance of Marc-Andre Fleury.
Mm-hmm.
It has been, and the NHL put up an interesting statistic out there to where, in terms of his first five games played, he's done this multiple times. He's done this 9 times in his career, where his first five, he's gone 5-0. He's matched his season from 2013 when it comes to shutouts and near save percentage. What is going on with Marc-Andre Fleury right now that's allowing him to have this success?
Well, Marc-Andre Fleury is just, he's really taken a step in controlling his own personal momentum. We talk about how athletic he is, what he's able to ask of his body. And it was on display several times last night. As I said, he was asked to make quite a few backdoor saves where guys were open, wide open in front of the net. And you cannot have that. But to make sure that your head upstairs doesn't start speeding up, that you don't start chasing that puck, because then you start to feel like, oh, I'm on a little bit more of a distant island than I usually am because the defense aren't here to support me. And so you start oversliding a little bit, or maybe challenging a little bit more than you should. So you're giving up, you know, different angles, or making it really tough for yourself to recover back in the crease if there's a rebound. And he's done a really good job of quelling that and making sure that he's able to kind of compartmentalize each one of the plays and the sequence of saves, and then kind of just resetting and calming down. He's also been pretty effective on the puck handling front, which teams do tend to challenge our goaltenders with. Robin Leonard is obviously the lesser skilled of the two in that department. And there's a lot of goaltenders right these days where that's a huge component of their game and the team's success, especially on the breakout. But it's mostly about don't make a mistake. If you can get to a puck and stop that and help that team's breakout, it's great. But it's just about him being in the groove, because sometimes, you know, last year I felt if he had lower shot totals, it was harder for him to stay engaged. He seems much more able to stay laser focused and, as I said, not get carried away by the tempo of the weather that's going on around him.
He had a good start last year, fairly similar again, but we saw the breakdown kind of middle way through the season.
Because we were riding him.
Right. And he struggled a little bit in the bubble, obviously. But he's clearly off to a solid start this season.
Yeah.
There are clearly some struggles that are happening with Robin Leonard right now.
Well, there have been, but tomorrow, if he makes that start, it's his next chance to rectify that and bring another performance, because you have to leave that in the past. You have to.
Do you study your own tape at that point, or do you just have to let the game come to you?
Well, it depends. It depends on what he does to prepare himself. If that's something that he does that helps him, you know, prepare, that's been part of his routine, then yes. You don't deviate from what you're doing. That's the big thing. And like I said, it's Marc-Andre Fleury's not chasing, and that can be in the actual play, and that can be away from the ring. Sometimes you start to do too much. You start to doubt yourself too much. Just stick to your routine. Your body knows what to do. You've been training it for your entire life to just be mindless and make the saves. As long as Robin Leonard, who's a much more analytical guy, starts to stay back in his crease a little bit, again, not chasing as much, not pressing the play as much, and minding his angles, he's going to find his way back to this. He just needs the opportunity to get it, and it's really about him getting off to a really good start, because it's hard to dig yourself out of that mental hole if you let in an early goal or two, because then you're just fighting it the rest of the way. You're trying to, like, I might get pulled, or I don't have it today. The team needs me to step up. Instead, let's just see if we can wade into this hot tub a little bit slower, so we don't just automatically burn ourselves right when we get in there.
We thought the third period was messy. It's clear. We talked about it. The third line made some mistakes and whatnot. I mean, really, what happened to allow Anaheim back into a game like that? Knowing, I mean, you're down 4-1, and you climb back and you have an equalizer in that game, you know, up until Whiteclaw saved there late. I mean, what? We talk about the things that can defeat the Golden Knights, was it themselves that beat them up, or was it Anaheim actually stepping up?
It was a little bit of both, because as you mentioned earlier, just a few minutes ago, that the demoralization of that redirect for that goal that kind of put the Ducks in a hole, that the goal that we just talked about as well, where the Marc-Andre Fleury makes an unbelievable save backdoor, and then his team isn't there to fully support him in the way that he needs, and then they score right away, and all of a sudden you're just kind of like, uh-oh, here they go. And then Anaheim gets some added belief into their lineup, being like, guys, we can push, because if you see, they scored, 5 minutes into that third period, and they scored again about 2 minutes later, and they scored again about 2 minutes after that on the power play, but just at the very end of it. That second goal that Marc-Andre Fleury gave up in the third period wasn't the greatest, but then again, you had forwards that weren't picking up the duck that was crashing that net hard. We weren't moving our feet as fast in order to actually keep up and defend him. Chandler Stephenson was on the guy, and it was a bobbling puck, but because he was moving faster than we were, that's how that goes in, and then it's just kind of like, we got to find the end of the thread here. And so once they climbed back, and it was a tie game, it was chill for a while, but then Zach Whitecloud, who has been unbelievable and knowing when to step up in the play, which is great for him as a development because he's usually a defensive-minded defenseman. You just, once it was 0-0 again, essentially, because the game was tied, yep, Anything could happen. And so it's just about stopping the bleeding. They were able to do that and to execute and to escape with the win that they needed. But you could tell that the Ducks were really dejected after that because they showed a fight. They know that they had a chance to take a couple of points or at least push it to overtime. And so they're going to come back and snarl. And if you think all the media availability that they're saying, well, we're worried about the Vegas Golden Knights bench, we're worried about the guys in the locker room. They are. But these guys are also competitors. They're going to try to take advantage of this as best as they can. And, it's a tall task when you have a short bench and you're running around a little bit with your heads cut off. Just, we'll be glad that we got out with the points that we did, and we got to move on to our next game.
And that next game will, in fact, be tomorrow night as the Knights and Anaheim revisit the stage one more time. Coming up next, could it be the last year for Clayton in Los Angeles?
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Wonder whose boat in Tampa had this blasting.
Gronk. God, the Ying Yang Twins, come back!
Went playing Bad Bunny.
Yes. So many. I can only imagine the playlists. I bet there's some actual artists out there partying. Definitely not. Socially distanced, most likely.
Jimmy Buffett.
Yes, well, it's going to be a collection of characters down in Florida.
Undeniable. Yeah, yes. The Pirates certainly were out. Interesting article in the LA Times today. It was an exclusive with Jorge Castillo with Clayton Kershaw of the Los Angeles Dodgers. Kersh is in the final year of a three-year extension he signed 3 years ago. So he's got a $31 million of reasoning to come back. However, in the tone of the interview, where he talked a lot about visiting Starbucks and using an alias when he gets coffee,
it's
Tony Crenshaw. That's his alias at Starbucks.
Tony Crenshaw.
Well,
Clayton?
Yes, it's the extension of Clayton. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And Crenshaw is because people in Los Angeles still call him Clayton Crenshaw as opposed to Clayton Kershaw because of Crenshaw, the neighborhood in Los Angeles.
Brilliant.
So he goes by Tony Kershaw when he orders at Starbucks.
Interesting.
Crenshaw. So, but throughout this, he talked about being at home in Texas on the ranch that he owns there and being with his kids and coaching his kids and going to school. And it really felt like he's ready to call it a career.
An ode to the swan song that will be.
Perhaps. And he talks about the motivation isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
Because he's got the World Series ring now, which mm-hmm. was the big, I mean.
It was the elephant in the room.
Right. It's been the storyline for Kershaw ever since he, joined the Dodgers.
How many Cy Youngs does he have? Two or three?
Three. He has three.
And to make it, all the way there and be denied, and then all the way there and then be denied, and to have some of the playoff, implosions that he's had, I can only imagine like the relief that he probably felt to win that just a couple months ago, and to do it in Texas of all places too.
That's the thing. It's where he grew up. It's where he lives. The thinking is that if he finishes his career here with the Dodgers, that he could either just, I'm done, because mm-hmm. I've got the ring.
It's 36.
I've been able to step aside. Yes, age is also a consideration for him. And the fact that, we've now gone two seasons where he's been scratched from opening day starts.
That's
due
true.
To back issues.
Yeah. and nerve stuff. And like you said, his kids are older. I mean, they're not older, but they're enough to like know what dad does and like understand the magnitude. And he said he wants to coach the kids. Those are, you could put it off for a few more years, but those are years that you don't get back.
The retirements that we talked about yesterday, a lot of these same things, you know, came up about being able to want to live life a little bit more.
Sure.
It's clear he doesn't need the money. You look at the Dodgers in terms of their payroll. It's not Kershaw that would also come off the books in 21. You also have Kenley Jansen, the closer, mm-hmm. who was, you know, I think they'll be relieved to take his money off the books regardless of what he does, because a $28 million closer just, you know,
it's not really how the game is working now.
Yeah, it's not the baseball economy. And
we have opening first two innings, second two, three, four innings.
Right. You don't need a lot. You're able to tie up the money in other places. They'll have to figure out what to do with Corey Seager as well. And they still don't have Justin Turner coming back.
They got to pay him.
So you look at Kershaw in terms of, you know, his entire career is with the Dodgers. He started with them in 2006. This would be 15 years. It would just be that round out of 15 years and him stepping away, where there are basically two options, where the Dodgers have not talked extensions with him at all if he decides to keep pitching. So
he's going to garner a price tag that they might be unwilling to pay just by his resume alone, and out of respect because he has been with your team for so long.
Right. So you're talking 1 year, assume that he'll play for his number. You know, he'll go, he'll play for $23 million.
Right.
Okay, we'll just put that out there, 27.
I guess
we'll just put that out there,
right?
Or 27. I'm sorry,
but when we were talking about this, but before the show, you know, I think the move to get Trevor Bauer, while it is, you know, very much a now move, it's kind of to ease that into the next chapter. I don't think they're not closing the book, because you didn't just sign Mookie Betts to win one championship.
Right, Betts is a long term deal,
exactly. And so to make sure that there isn't a drop off. And to kind of hedge your bets a little bit, it's the natural progression of any championship window team, because it's nobody is forever.
Dodgers have the lucky ability to be able to do that. Yeah. A lot of clubs, you know, coming. I mean, we've seen, you know, the Florida Marlins is the most extreme example, but we've seen them get dismantled, you know, very quickly after the World Series. Right. You see these teams that don't have the ability to stay in that hunt on a consistent basis, where it's kind of one. It's like, oh, where'd they go? What happened?
Yeah, they get a special group, but they don't have the payroll, or they don't want to put that much money into the payroll to make that an every year possibility.
There's an amazing arms race, you know, in the National League West with San Diego, obviously a young club. They've added a bunch of bodies. San Francisco still trying to stay relevant, and Arizona is Arizona. They just overachieve with young players until about the latter one third of the season. Then they just kind of collapse like a house of cards. Dodgers do have a young farm system still. They've got two live arms in Walker Buehler and Dustin May.
Yeah.
And Price coming back off a year where he didn't pitch at all,
which will, I think, revitalize him a little bit, and he definitely needed it.
So there's depth, but to see the Dodgers without Kershaw could be, and I'm not saying that's earth-shattering by any means, because we all know players move on.
Yeah.
We see them move and whatnot, but it really depends. Can he go out on a high note again? And I'm not saying you have to win a World Series, although as a Dodgers fan, I would love that.
Right.
But if you...
You don't want to feel like something's unfinished, right?
Yeah, and he's got... that's the crazy thing, is he's got the finishing part already. Like,
yeah.
He has
Tell him about the glove.
He has it. So the glove that he wore, that he's been wearing since 2007, he finally put it in a case. Like he was
pitching with the same glove.
The same glove. He's retired that glove. He put it in a case, and there's a plaque on it that literally says 2007 to 2020. This is the glove.
Because he said, I'm going to win a World Series in this glove.
Which,
and now he has.
So he's got that. So there's so many chapters that are closing. Again, the signs are kind of pointing to yes, if you borrow the eight ball, so to speak, to where this could be it. And again, for a guy like this, you know, who does have the ring, the standard of success in 21, I think, is going to be the big question mark. I think is, like, if he does come back, decide to pitch another year, it would just be for purely personal reasons, whether it's with the Dodgers or whether it happens to be in Texas with, you know, the Rangers or the Astros, which I don't see.
You want
the
farewell tour in front of fans. I'm sure there's an element of that as well.
Right. Exactly. To where, you know, we will not have fans in many ballparks that Kershaw is going to be playing.
Right.
And just certainly for the first half of the season.
And he deserves that ovation. He deserves that. And not just, you know, a Dodgers stadium, but we see what you know, the other baseball teams and organizations do for some of the game's greatest. And you have to include him in one of the best pitchers of his generation. Like, he's a Hall of Famer, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's your first ballot.
So
first ballot Hall of Famer.
I think there's an element of that as well, that I feel like the fans owe him And I'm sure he wants to give them that opportunity too, because there, I think there's something to be said about the fact that we didn't know that we weren't going to have fans for a couple of years.
I think if I'm Kershaw looking at this and, you know, how personal it is to him and being with the Dodgers who drafted him. So he's an OG.
Yeah.
You know, the entire, you know, entire
to
career.
And to have that, all that success, it's rare.
Right. To where I think it's going to depend on how successful his season is this year. If he goes out there and all of a sudden gets hurt and it's like a 5-1 or a 5-2.
Like you said, a couple of scratch starts.
Yeah. Where I'm not sure he might call that unfinished business and maybe want to come back for one more year and give it a go. And if he feels he can't get it done, he just doesn't get it done. But, you know, spring training last year, we saw what happened before we took the big pause. You know, he sat. I mean, he didn't throw at all. And everyone's like, okay, what's going on with Kershaw? And then he came out and threw one inning. It was like, oh,
yeah,
he's back.
But
and
do you think
fine.
He would throw, like, he'd be a bullpen guy in the regular season?
No.
Like, playoffs, it's one thing.
No.
So that's the kind of what we talked about with LeBron too. It's just like you want to go out with the jersey and the role that you've played in many ways. And sometimes you don't get that opportunity, whether it's your body doesn't allow you or the team doesn't allow you, because things are just starting to get a little gnarly. I think it's just about be happy about having him this year in general, because you don't know. None of us know. We've all had, you know, reconsiderations and everything.
Well, the pressure to return to the World Series certainly weighs on.
Well,
him,
they should. They got all the talent.
Now that he's got the ring, it's a different kind of pressure.
Yeah.
I think at this point for him, and it might be just the decision.
Hot tub jets aren't painful anymore. It's just a nice massaging tone. There we go.
Correct. Others can do the job for me.
We're not drinking from the fire hose.
Because I've done it, and we saw everybody enjoy the victory.
We have the crown jewel.
We will certainly see the 2021 season just around the corner. We will be again your home of the Dodgers here in 2021. Spring training starts in pitchers and catchers report in a week. And first spring training games are 17 days away.
It's happening.
Coming up next, goats.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Oh, we're going to dig into farm animals here. Yeah, specifically the goats.
Yes. So many conversations. The stock for goats has never been higher.
It's true.
Pygmy goats are super funny. They just like jump. Pygmy most goats. I still don't get it. It looks like you don't have knees, but they got hops.
Right, and on all fours, too.
Yes.
They just kind of,
yeah,
the spring.
Just, boom.
Well, gravity always wins. And there are, through a couple of websites, they have put together the greatest goat. This is based on geotagged Twitter data.
Yes.
Of each state. They've all come through for us and said, you know,
greatest athlete of all time.
Right. Of just in terms of just moments and where you think, you know, someone should be in the conversation of.
In the pantheon of greatness.
The greatest of all time.
Yes.
This is just each state in the U.S. This is geotagged information. Most popular is Thomas Brady.
Yes.
Thomas Brady is, and this is fresh, obviously, off of a Super Bowl victory, but it's hard.
He had six before he had the seven.
It's hard to deny that. Between him and LeBron James, who is also the biggest GOAT, at least according to those here in Nevada. So Nevada leans LeBron.
And Ohio.
In Ohio.
But then again, there haven't been a lot of great memes except for that, you know, great year. Was it 2015? 16? 16.
Yes.
It was 16.
There are some certain geographical notables. Rogers in Wisconsin. No doubt about that. He will always be the GOAT there.
Mm-hmm.
Next door, it's Tom Brady because he went to, you know, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Peyton Manning in Indiana.
Yep.
John Elway is the outlier.
Yep. They are not swayed by his inability to take that success and greatness into his GM post that he is, you know, since rescinded.
Right. Larry Walker played in Denver. And Larry Walker's a Hall of Famer, too. And he's not.
Joe Sakic played there. Nathan McKinnon plays there,
right.
Paul. They don't care.
They're not on there.
Peter Forsberg. Patrick Wah.
Serena Williams pops up.
You know who knows what they're talking about, Paul?
Connecticut. People.
Yeah, well, yes.
Connecticut.
Hartford, yes.
Maryland.
Respectable. Crab cakes and football. That's what Maryland does.
Washington State.
Yep. Get it?
And Minnesota.
This is what we do, Paul. We know what is up. We are educated. We are awesome. We are with it. And we understand the context because we get it. Tom Brady, one of the greatest leaders ever. That record's never going to be broken whenever he decides to call it quits. But you cannot deny the greatness that is Serena Williams, and in terms of the dominance over everyone else, not just in women's tennis, in all tennis.
No,
Paul.
No one's denying that here. That's very
clear.
You're
damn right we're not.
It's very clear. No one's denying that there. Also, Joe Montana in California. Of all the players in California lore,
it's not Kobe.
Joe Montana.
Right? I mean, they've had a lot of champions. I mean, they usually tend to buy them from the lesser places
sure.
to want to come win here.
Montana, for the majority of his career, was in San Francisco.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the interesting one. That's really the interesting
there's
one,
a
I
lot,
think.
There's a lot to choose from.
They do, because Jordan, I mean, Michael Jordan's the other one, too. I say the other one.
Yeah, the other one.
Michael Jordan's the other GOAT.
Yeah.
You know,
and pretty much everywhere in the Midwest besides right. Nebraska.
And Utah pays him some respect there by saying Jordan is the greatest of all time.
Yeah.
In Utah.
Well, their only
know.
Major sport is basketball.
Right. Well, they know firsthand what Michael Jordan could do to a team.
Correct.
They know firsthand.
Nothing but respect.
That is respect. There's no doubt about that.
Yep. Yeah.
Montana's the weird one in California. There's so many to choose from there.
Right.
Is the point.
Yeah. LeBron, huge in Idaho.
Idaho.
Yep, huge in Idaho.
And everybody loves Tom Brady in the Dakotas.
Yep, so. And Tom Brady has supplanted Florida, in a quick 6 months.
1 year, less than.
Yeah,
well
legit.
Done. Well done, Tom. Go play catch in another park.
Yeah.
And get some water, dude.
Yes, please. Somebody hold his hair back, please.
So there are your goats across the United States. The greatest goat map. Coming up next, football at 4 as the Playmakers rolls on.
Inside information on your teams, honest opinion, and the biggest names in sports. It's time, Las Vegas, for the Playmakers.
Hour number 2, the big show on this hump day. Paul Wyhander here, 6.345 feet away, socially distant, is Lindsey Brown. We are rolling through the day here. Some football news coming for you, as well as at 4:25, the NHL's COVID problem and what to do. And at 4:45, we will talk about the playing of the national anthem before sporting events.
What a plethora of options.
Lots of fun stuff coming your way. But first, let's do the whole football at 4 thing.
Oh, the footiest of football. When you get attention, you think it's a bad thing, even though it's a good thing. It means you're playing well.
Truth. The boat parade was today in Tampa.
Yes.
Where they threw the Lombardi Trophy around like a rag doll at a Toys R Us.
Yeah, we got another one.
That's the truth. Bruce Arians, apparently, during the parade, was a little
tipsy,
lubricated, and has been very colorful in his language, of which I cannot say too many things.
Athletics.
But he does say this whole run it back bleep. That's Kansas City's bleep. We're going for 2, and we ain't stopping there.
Okay. Just seems like a very long way to take to the same answer.
Correct.
We just don't want it to be a hashtag.
Yes, he also did a couple of other things, talked about. I've been to a lot of bleep parties. This is a bleep party.
Oh, I bet.
On the mic.
Uh-huh. Live on TV.
Hi,
it's
Bruce.
Florida. Nobody cares.
Remember, Bruce Arians, actually, we're just learning this today. Bruce Arians' family apparently asked him to opt out of the 2020 season before it even started. And he says, I'm just going to risk it. He tells the LA Times this. And he convinced his wife, Christine, who I'm told is the salt of the earth, through people who know the couple very well, that he would be very careful on and off the field. Now, you saw him at the games. Like,
yeah.
he was Andy Reid-esque at the beginning, had the face mask,
yeah.
had the extra stuff going on. And then it slowly morphed into, like, almost like a extra from Battlestar Galactica. He strapped, like, everything to him. Like, no
yeah.
one needed to touch him because he carried, like, extra battery packs for the headsets on him.
Yeah, he was auditioning for Chewbacca, but yeah, hairless.
He had that stuff, like, taped to him almost.
Yeah. But the thing is, too, though, is like, you know, he said we haven't been in a restaurant forever, even though it's open air. He's like, I go to work and I go home. That's very similar existence that you and I live. And, you know, you think people were bought into the TB12 method? You think he was going out and about? I think everybody in that's why you win. That's why you bring him in. And I think that's why they're successful, because he's that good of a leader. Guys, we're not going out. Okay. Sounds good. Sounds good, Tommy. Can we come over for dinner? Can Giselle cook, though? but I believe him, and considering he had, you know, health problems before, that's what yep. was his reasoning for his first initial retirement after his time in Arizona. But I, you know, I think he saw the writing on the wall and the special opportunity. He said to Tom, well, this is a championship winning team where you're the missing piece. They just have to believe it. Well, he believed it. And he thought it was worth the risk. And he's how old? You don't know if you're going to get another chance. He's the oldest winning coach, Super Bowl winning coach of all time. So it's worth the risk. I'm sure his wife and kids probably weren't super pleased, but you know, you do your best. And you lock everything down. I totally believe it.
Well, he's cementing some legendary status, certainly in Tampa. And, you know, you know what his mantra is. No risk it, no biscuit.
Yeah.
That is Bruce Arians in a nutshell. So for him to pull this off and, again, learning that his family actually did want him to opt out.
Yeah.
For him pushing through.
I'm sure there are a lot of families of coaches and players as well. But some people, like you said, risk it for the biscuit.
Right. And he came out on the other side clean.
Yeah.
Except today he's like Tom Brady.
See.
Very
yeah.
very yeah. toasty today.
So probably a little bit tougher of a carry too versus Tom. No offense.
Some of the tweets that are floating out there about what happened during the boat parade today in Tampa, which is still going on by the way right now.
Yeah.
But not with the Buccaneers.
Do they still have the escorts though?
Yeah.
Police escorts, I should say.
I don't think so. I think they're just clearing out at this point. No one's. Everybody's like, "Are you going to work today? You got to be kidding me." That's literally everybody they've talked to. Everybody that's been interviewed on TV during this boat parade thing.
No. Good things usually don't happen in Tampa Bay, but they're happening this year. That's been a theme because Washington had their kind of championship run bunch. LA did.
Yeah.
It's been weird how it's the success is bunched in the cities. Like once one team wins, the other ones win too. Everybody's thirsty for it. They're inspired.
Well, it's
the
special.
Blues in Kansas City.
Championships are special. There's no doubt about it.
Minnesota would win one.
When you could take advantage of those, they're very positive. There is some uneasiness about Russell Wilson right now to where there are more reports coming out about some discontent. I wouldn't say true unhappiness when it comes to Seattle, but at least according to one of his former teammates, Brandon Marshall, he was on Fox.
Remember what Brandon Marshall's job is
right,
these days.
Truth. He was on Fox Sports this morning and said Russell Wilson is beyond frustrated, and he believes that Wilson is trying to figure out how to move on from them.
I think he's probably just trying to apply some pressure by maybe saying, I'm not as contented. Because he's usually a company line guy, and if not more. He's reigning Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. But we got to remember, you know, he was on an MVP pace and the Seahawks lost a couple games and they kind of fell off. Whether I forget what it, if it was injury or whatever, but the plan was figured out. And he is so good because he walked so Patrick Mahomes could run. He's one of those mobile quarterbacks, but it gets harder and harder to take those hits to make those plays at 31 versus when you're 25, 26.
Well, there's only so many. I mean, if you look at the state of the NFL right now, there are only so many, like, dominant offensive linemen that are out there.
Right.
You have a lot of...
And injuries are up. That's the big thing.
You have C+, B+ guys. There are very few lines that are truly, like, stud lines. Everybody thought the Raiders had one this year.
It's all about versatility.
They got broken down piece by piece, week after week after week. The Colts held pretty well. I mean, just based on how Phil Rivers, before he retired, you know, had a pretty solid season.
But who knew the humans that are, you know, 6'6", 350 pounds didn't grow on trees.
Right.
That play football that can do it at this high level.
The argument about the Chiefs, if they were full strength.
100% it's a different game.
Yeah, there's a lot of what-ifs about that. But yeah, I mean, if you have your starters in a ball game who've been playing the entire season and maybe missed a couple of plays during bumps and bruises, things are different. You know?
We're pushing our bodies to the limit when it comes to like what we are biologically capable. You know, we're not meant to be that big and to move that fast. That's what makes them so good. But then you see Achilles injuries that are starting to really pop up. It used to be knees, but now it's more ankle stuff. And that's everything. And like you said, it's not exactly like the pool depth that we're used to, because anybody can catch a ball, but not everybody can like put on 30 pounds in a year and a half. And so it's that just shows you how special it is when you do have one that is so dominant. But you have to be able to provide the protection that's necessary for your quarterback, because he might have been able to handle it better, but now he should have a couple more rings by now.
Russ,
one of them got taken away from him.
Russ might be feeling the age of the NFL. He's going to be 33 this upcoming season. He's got three more years under his current contract.
He's got three kids.
Being paid very fairly, but he might be seeing some of that light on the other side going, my window is closing as well.
Yep.
I could use some help up front if you think we can get there again, because he looks at DK Metcalf, who is a
generational talent.
Yeah, he's chiseled. out of stone. You know, he's got Tyler Lockett on the other side. He's legitimately got some offensive weapons. Could he use a healthier running game? Yeah, it'd be helpful if Chris Carson could stay on the field. But he's,
I think about it, though, the Seahawks are really average, though. He's what really has kept them in, because they were really average for a few years. But you're like, until DK got there, what, he's going to go into his third year? It was Lockett and Legion of Boom. But since then, they haven't had a running game. They haven't really had anything
that could help him
compete at a legitimate pace where it's not all on him.
They've been leaning on him a ton, obviously, and he's a smart player.
His
He understands the game. But yeah, if you're picking late in first round
or just
things
middle,
like that,
and you miss for a few years, or a couple guys get injured, or they have character issues,
free agency didn't help them a ton either.
I mean, he's kind of right. He's a really big band-aid to that team, I think. Probably more than I've just considered, more than just this point. Because he does have weapons, but you're just kind of thinking, like, if Russell Wilson is a 10, where's the rest of the team, like, as a collective? Where do you think?
Outside of a couple of special players.
Yeah.
But they contend every year. I mean, contend in terms of the playoffs every year, but maybe they're not a Super Bowl team anymore.
Because there's just... It's not enough just to have like one star wide receiver. He's never really had Jimmy. You know what it was? It was a trade for Jimmy Graham when they traded for him and the Saints, because they were betting on the tight end wave, and they sent a couple of first round picks. I'm sure a couple of those maybe turn into Alvin Kamara and some of their defenders. You've already used your picks in other spots, and you had the defense start to go away. That's probably 100% it, because you sent away a bunch of your capital to get a guy that was not worth the bus, and then he was off that roster within 2 or 3 years.
Right, and you had the flyer they took on Clowney, who was fine, but
exactly.
Yeah, the window, he may be seeing the window close, and he might be a step slower now these days too, just based on getting smashed and hit, and maybe he's seeing that realization
too. You have the young kids as well. You're like, oh yeah. There is life after football, isn't there?
Yeah, I don't see Russell trying to pave an exit out of Seattle, but he definitely does need a little help.
They need to support him better. They need to hit on a couple of big time free agents or whatever.
That's the
Pete Carroll thing can only go so far.
That's the rolling of the dice, though, when it comes to the draft, too, in terms of finding impact players.
He's probably seeing other quarterbacks leave and leave their, you know, this is my home, this is my team, and then they're actually having a shot somewhere else.
Well, Tom Brady set the pace. Mm-hmm. It's very clear that was...
Well, even Phil Rivers. Like, we didn't expect crap from him this year, and they went to the playoffs.
Right. Russell Wilson and Indianapolis.
Right, exactly. I'm sure he's like, well, what if I did have an offensive line? Could you imagine?
Right. I know we went away from Tampa Bay. We're coming back to it. It's Lindsay's favorite player, Adrian Peterson, who says he is interested.
Wait, is he?
In joining the Buccaneers.
Oh, you don't say. You don't want to be part of that rebuilding process and those kneecap eaters up in Detroit anymore? What?
15 seasons, he wants to have a chance at winning a Super Bowl ring.
I'm sure he does.
LeSean McCoy got his ring. He didn't play it down in the Super Bowl.
I'm sure they would consider it. Because I don't know. Do you think Leonard Fournette stays there? I think he would probably, you know, he's still, what, 25, 26? Maybe a little bit older?
He might be able to.
He might go chase the dollar, because you have to as a running back with his value window.
Well, the window is certainly... Yeah, I mean, the rings are one thing, but he's got that now.
Right.
You know, I've got the ring. It was great. Hey, thanks, Tom.
So it wasn't
Tom.
Like he had a great regular season, but now that you've been around that greatness, like, teams will buy into that. And Peterson, you know, is like he was carrying that Vikings team for a very long time. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they kicked the tires on him as a third option.
Peterson played for Arians in Arizona.
I was there for like eight games.
I was there, but he did, and he ran.
He's really good at playing against his former teams and like no one else.
His debut was stellar.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about it. It's the one thing that I'm sure you know most players at that point in your career are like, hey, let's go get a ring, let's go chase, let's go get what
I think
we can
he probably
get.
Has enough in the tank for Tom to give him the blessing
in Tampa. Yeah,
play on the cheap.
Yeah, he would have to take it.
He would take a veteran's minimum, and that's the thing. You're not going to be able to ask that of Fournette. There's too many other guys you got to sign.
Yeah, I don't think anyone will sign Peterson for more than the veteran's minimum at this point.
No. Maybe this is his shot.
That's not determining. There are 35 more running backs ahead of him that do more things.
We find crazy talent in third, fourth, fifth round anyways. Gotta get them reps.
Yeah, so Adrian Peterson, in no shock, wants to join the Buccaneers and Tom Brady next season. See if that one happens. Lamar Jackson may not have his Pro Bowl tackle next year, which is odd, but hey, this is about personality, and this is not about Baltimore or the trajectory of the Ravens, Pro Bowl offensive tackle Orlando Brown says he wants to be traded. He wants to play left tackle.
It's not even personality, it's positional preference.
Yeah, his dad played left.
And they have a left tackle instead that they would prefer to play at his natural position. So Brown wants to leave. Interesting gamble, right?
Right.
Usually you don't say, this is the way I want to play. But I also, for a guy that stands on his principles and he wants to honor the legacy of his father, but his father was also a Raven.
Yes.
So you're like, well, is it? But it's very much the left tackle's the best athlete, the blindside guy.
Right, but Lamar Jackson's left-handed, so he was protecting Lamar's blindside as the right tackle, but he says he wants to play left.
That makes even less sense. But it's his body, it's his career if he wants to do it. He's going to fetch a heck of a bushel of picks if they can move him, but there's a lot of, like... It's a lot of movement on that Ravens squad. And most of them say, love, like what they did when they cut Mark Ingram, right?
Yes.
Love the organization, treated us great. And I'm sure that's 100% right. But this isn't the only time. But they did trade he's a defensive lineman. I was going to say in Ngakoue from the Vikings.
Well, right. Their defense got rebuilt and they know the defense is good. But this is a league of haves and have-nots right now. When you see the teams that are the haves, that have the talent, have the base, have the coaching.
And as just to point to our conversation a few minutes ago about the big-time humans.
Yes.
He could fetch a big-time price.
He could, and
he's,
that's...
what, 24? 25?
A pro bowler, not hurt, has interest in going someplace that, you know, it's...
So I'm Seattle, I'm calling.
If you need help up front, but what do you have? Again, you have to offer something.
He's probably at least two firsts, right?
Well, and then there's the issue is, like, are you willing to give up? I mean, you have a proven commodity here.
Right.
Are you willing to give up more than just one or a player or something along those lines?
And we know that that offensive line is probably the most valued position, the most valuable, but it's not the one that's going to fetch the biggest price because it's not flashy.
Right. But it's the one that
it's hardest to find.
If you're a quarterback and you're in need of line help, this is the guy you go get.
If I'm the Vikings, I'm calling. If I'm the Seahawks, I'm calling. If I'm the Raiders, I'm calling.
And they're okay to let him go. They're okay. Right. That's the whole thing about
Baltimore.
Well,
you don't want to keep people in there that don't want to be there.
But these are these deals and these are these signings. Again, we're going to start seeing all this kind of flush out in 5 weeks from now when they can actually officially sign players and these trades can become official. You look at this and then you go, okay, well, the draft, and we're seeing mock drafts everywhere on the planet right now.
Right.
10 weeks from now when we actually have that draft, people are going to want the assets. They're going to want to have those picks in hand to where they can move up, move down, because it is a fairly deep draft this year in terms of at least offense.
Right. And he's still on his rookie deal, but he's, he was a third round pick, so there's no, option year. So essentially, that's also a big ask as well. Is like, have you seen enough from him to be like, I'm going to give you the big time extension that we usually associate with a tackle that size or a guard? You know what I mean?
Yeah, he might be worth the money. There's no doubt about that.
I bet.
Just in terms of the resume alone.
But it's a tough time to be coming right into your prime right now.
Yes.
As in the market.
Yes. So we'll see what happens with Orlando Brown Jr. The
last name, though.
The Washington Jr.? The Washington football quarterback room got bolstered today. Alex Smith is still under contract. Kyle Allen, my man, is not under contract.
You
but
love
they do
generic
they,
names.
They do like him, but they did re-sign Taylor Heinicke today for 2 years.
Well, it was inspiring to dive for the pylon. They were the ones that were that close to beating Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay walked after that.
Right.
They were that close.
They love him. Like,
Vikings
this.
Didn't need him.
They love this guy. That's right. Minnesota cut him loose.
Denver didn't need him.
All cut him loose.
Yep.
But he made him. He's
why not?
He's been with Carolina. He was with Carolina, and then he shows up in Washington. That's Kyle Allen's deal too. Both played for Rivera.
Right. But that's the thing. Rivera's a character, guys. They signed him like what, that week or the couple weeks before then, and he started in that game and he almost won. A lot of heart in that guy.
This is interesting how WFT goes, because they do have a high draft choice that if they make this, they lock this down, I don't see them shopping for a quarterback in the draft. They may shop for a playmaker or another defender to help them out and just make that defense studly, just considering where they play, the NFC East. right now, the weakest division. What am I going to do? I'm just going to try to dominate you. I'm going to get scores in some places because my team is, you know, 1 year older.
Yeah, they're a talented team, but I don't know if they're talented enough to support a brand new quarterback that you're trying to, like, bring through the league. Like, you know, whether it's just like you're far along enough in your progression where you can support that. I don't know. I'm not saying I don't predict success for them next year, but I don't see how the NFC East can be as bad as they were this past season. And so it might be a little premature or risky to go with another quarterback in the first round, to your point, because it's right. Just like there's a lot of people starting from the same starting line, and you want to have a little bit more ripened just talent around that kid. If we've learned anything from Dwayne Haskins, not to say that it was more off the field things with him, but I think it's easier for guys to buy into the system and into their job and the court, what's necessary to be an NFL quarterback if things are going well initially.
Yeah, Washington's defensive line, they're all first rounders, all four starters.
Yeah.
That's where they went. So this is probably going to be an offensive
draft. Yeah, makes sense.
At least for them.
Yeah, because it's like, who do they have to help support the, like, weapon-wise, offensive weapon-wise? Not a ton.
Yeah, it's McLaurin.
Yeah, you don't want to have a young guy working with basically nothing. It's very much a recipe for a failure, and it's just a waste of that pick at that point.
Yeah, we'll see. Clemson running back. I can't remember his name for the life of me. I'm gonna quick Google here.
They need like a good solid running back.
Travis Etienne, who was the ACC's all time leading rusher. Etienne would be a stud. He'd be great.
Perfect
for them at number 19. He'd be a good value.
Go with more the New York Giants plan, except maybe upgrade from who's quarterback guy there that you love?
Daniel Jones.
Yeah, but they went and got Saquon first.
But I do like Daniel Jones.
Yeah,
I'm not in love, but I'm in like.
Okay, that's okay. You can still send him a Valentine.
I could. I choose you with a picture of a train. Coming up next, the NHL's COVID problem and our answers to solve it.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul and Lindsay with you on this Wednesday afternoon. Remember, if you miss any portion of this program, you can revisit it or just subscribe to the show or the Nightcap podcast. We have two of them available from us. You can do so through the radio.com app. It is free through the Google Play Store or iTunes App Store. To favorite us, just search us out. Just type in CBS Sports Radio 1140 and then hit the heart in the upper portion of the screen.
Share with your friends.
You can. Also, you can check out our brand new website as well. Lots of local content. It's easier to get to the podcasts, which has been a thing. It was a thing with the old site.
Yes.
The old site was really hard to find some of the audio.
Accessibility matters, Paul.
It does.
It does indeed.
Wow, that's a lot of hearts.
It is a lot of hearts. Well, it's, you know, almost B-Day.
It is almost Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
I get pitches all the time for like topics and like love doctors and stuff in my email.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That'd be hilarious.
As I put this show together, our friend Chet over on our sister station, 98.5 KLUC.
Which
you can also favorite through the radio.com app if you want to listen to Chet drone on and on in the morning. He's got a psychic that comes on.
I kind of want to do a psychic one day.
Dan Spivey.
Oh, yeah. Gary Spivey.
Yeah,
he used to do, he does radio hits up in Minnesota, too.
Yeah, so Gary Spivey shows up and talks about dating things. And people call in, ask about their love life and stuff like that. And I'm just like, okay.
I kind of want to do a psychic one time.
Okay.
Just kind of see what they have to say.
Then we're going to talk about COVID here in just a moment, but you brought up Valentine's Day. Dating.com put up a bunch of tips for celebrating Valentine's Day, as well as the absolute worst gifts to give
Ooh.
To people.
Yeah, I mean, we might as well list them off quickly because we got a few more days heads up because day of is tough.
So don't do this. I can tell you exactly what my worst gift was that I gave to my wife, my now wife, back in the day when we were courting. I'll get to that in a second. Some of the worst gifts users from dating.com had been given in past years include wilted flowers, Valentine's Day themed socks.
That depends on the Valentine's Day themed sock.
A bag of unopened Halloween candy.
That's not great.
A picture frame with no picture in it.
It's not going to garner you a lot of luck.
And a pet hamster.
I mean, yeah, hamsters are tough.
78%.
Maybe a guinea pig.
78% said they have gotten gifts they did not enjoy. Other things.
Ask your partner.
Ashtray.
Yeah.
Used gift card.
Yep.
Open bottle of liquor.
Yeah, there you go. Take a swig, hon.
And this is the one that just never, ever, ever do unless it is requested.
Mm-hmm.
An online workout subscription.
Oh, boy. Yeah, wasn't that like the controversy about the Peloton commercial last year? It was like for yes. It was a Valentine's Day, and you're like, get this. You're like, oh, I'm sorry. Am I not the shape enough for you to love? Like, yes. All right, Ed. But I'm going to give a little tip to everyone. What's your partner's love language? Whatever that is, if you don't know what that is, first of all, you got some work to do, and you are behind the ball.
Lindsay's doing the dating advice.
Because I'm so successful. I'm not looking. Trust me. I got things to do on my own. But there's so many people that are like, yeah, let's get this gift. Is that something that they would enjoy, or you're just Googling good gifts? Like, sometimes it's just like, I want to be able to go out for a day and not be around the kids.
It's hard. It's very difficult to find that perfect
Valentine's
gift. I know.
So read the room.
Gift.
Read the room.
It's very difficult.
Read the room.
That's
I'm guessing if you got kids, if you're not kids and your partner's a lady, she probably wants time away.
You've been saving a lot of money, folks. Let's be honest.
Yeah. Just be like, please take the car and go to the park. Go do whatever you want to do. Just say day off. You go do what you want to do. Here's $100. Go.
Here's $100.
Or whatever. I don't know.
Go play some
like
video
I said,
poker
I'm not
at Albertsons.
I'm not successful. I don't know what to get anybody for Valentine's Day.
So, the worst gift I ever got my wife when we were courting again.
The courtship.
Got her a calendar.
Oh, boy. Was it a calendar with you?
It was a calendar, no, that
was
I had.
A fireman calendar? Because that's acceptable.
No, it was a calendar that I had. And again, I thought it was a great gift. It was a great gift, but I was told I was laughed out of the room afterwards. That I had marked significant dates in our relationship on this calendar throughout the calendar.
Sure.
Yeah.
Wasn't it?
The phrase goes over like a lead balloon.
Oh. That's usually part of a package.
Yeah, that was pretty brutal. We still ended up going out that night, but it was like, yeah.
Yeah. Or just don't celebrate it.
Missed.
Just like treat your people around you nice all the time.
Swing and a miss.
Yeah. That's why I don't do Valentine's Day.
Well, it's Cupid, though. So it's, you know, it's, I have a friend.
I don't like people that shoot me with arrows.
Gentleman that I worked with back in the day in a newsroom, his daughter actually used to work for Hallmark.
Oh, well, that's what this holiday is all about.
She was one of the writers. So if you've ever bought a greeting card, say in the last 10 years or so,
mm-hmm.
probably came from her brain.
Roses are red, violets are blue. Please get away from me. I kind of hate you. Thank you!
Well, at least it wasn't the man from Nantucket. The NHL has a COVID problem right now. There are three teams with multiple players. As a matter of fact, those three teams, Buffalo, Minnesota, and New Jersey, have roughly almost 30 players under COVID protocols, in which the NFL has a physically unable to perform list, the PUP list. The NHL now has a players determined not to be able to play due to COVID list.
Yeah, now the Golden Knights have an additional name.
Thomas Nosek.
Yeah, correct.
That came out today. They are going to play tomorrow. There are lots
makes
of
total sense.
The NHL has postponed now 34 games, and they've rescheduled pretty much everything. But right now, there was an article, TSN's Travis Yost, who we've had on the program before, he wrote a piece last week talking about how teams are now playing even more compressed, where it was supposed to be one day on, one day off, one day on, one day off.
Right.
And in some cases, there were 3 days in a few cases just because of travel or some sort of special events like the pond hockey that's going to be played here, hopefully, in the next 10 days up at Lake Tahoe, that there was a little bit of time built in. Now that we've seen all these postponements, at least throughout the league, a lot of these teams are playing on average. Within a 2 day period.
Yeah.
There are back to backs. The Knights have back to back technically this upcoming weekend.
Right. And that can be, you know, it can be because you're directly affected by COVID or just because your schedule happens to be inhibited by the teams that are impacted by COVID. And the thing is like all of these have costs, obviously, besides the dollar amounts. But then you're like, all right, so what is this going to do to our long-term health in terms of asking your body to do this much and to perform at this level, considering, you know, the disrupted year and a half that we've had about for about a year and a half now? And it's just, there has to be a breaking point here where either there's going to have to be a reduction in games or I don't really know. That's kind of what the next natural step is, because there's so many teams that it's not just like one or two. It's just getting way out of hand. And that's why I'm like super confused why we're playing that game tomorrow, because If there's one in there, there's probably going to be more, especially since he was on the bench for that entire game before the second period. And to just kind of, you can't control everything, but you can control how you respond. And I get it. The almighty dollar is undefeated. But it's just, at what point do we say, we're going to pause the whole division? Because you know who's not having problems? The Canadian division. Correct. Zero positives.
Correct. They have zero positives in Canada. And this drives me to what I was thinking about is, you know, I started reading a bunch of stuff on what, you know, how the COVID's affected the NHL. You know, we're, you know, the Devils haven't, Devils don't play for another 6 days. They have 19 players on the
list. And that's
right
even
now.
Still going to be a tough play right now.
There's not enough. There's six on the taxi squad. It's very difficult, you know, skating and whatever, you know. Crazy things could happen. But with Canada being in its own division, the NHL, in trying to create a solution for trying to navigate through COVID, actually gave itself, I think, a different dilemma. Mm-hmm. Because here's the deal. Canada, we know hockey is life.
Yeah.
I mean, it is life. But for one division to take a pause, like you suggest, and others are calling for pauses too within these divisions.
Or is the competitive advantage?
Correct. If you pause in the West, you pause in the Central, the East, or whatever it happens to be, and you sit for 2 weeks, Canada's still plowing through.
Right.
So now I'm in Canada. I got to play a 56 game schedule.
And possibly stop everything right before the playoffs.
Right. And stop.
Yeah.
But other teams, for example, we'll just say the West right now, if they pause, maybe the teams only play 48 games or 46 games.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm a Canadian team who's had to go through 10 more games and grind it out an extra, you know, 2 or 3 weeks.
Yep.
How is that fair to us? It feels like, well, while the NHL had best intentions right now in allowing home clubs to play, it feels like the adjustments are coming a little bit too late and a little too slow.
Right. And it just seems like the plan isn't able to get these things under control. And that's the thing too, is like why I'm confused why we're not pausing games, because it's not just about the spread of the actual virus for me at this point. It's about figuring out where exactly this breakdown is, because why are we just getting news of these positives, you know, so late? And I get it. If you take those rapid tests and buy a bunch of them, you're taking them away from other people. And there's a big time cost to that. But we had a system that worked in Canada when we bubbled. And I get it. The players don't want to do it. But at this point, that seems like the easiest way to fix this, because you can't expand the benches. It's the only sport where you sit shoulder to shoulder and snot rocket next to each other for 2.5 hours and just breathe in each other's everything.
Essence.
Exactly. and that's I feel like that's where the transmission is. And the thing, you only need one guy and he doesn't even have to be symptomatic, but the virus is still going to spread, but it's going to go through like wildfire. Like we had mumps a few seasons ago, mumps. Like we all get shots for that. And so it's just, it seems like they had a plan that was working initially, but the thing is it devolved quick. The Dallas Stars didn't even get off to the start just like everybody else. And you're like, well, there's all this fairness and stuff. I think it's past fairness right now, because it's too out of control. You got to somehow like contain this a little bit and just figure out where exactly are these transmissions happening? Because if it's happening on the bench, if it's happening in the ways that I think it is, because I know how disgusting it is, because I was one of those disgusting human beings. Like you can't say like no fighting. You can't just be like no celebrating you can't do that. You can't take that stuff out of the game. I mean, we were spitballing before, like let's get rid of faceoffs. I'm like, well, we'll just say yeah, you get to win. Teams like the Golden Knights, who suck in the faceoff dots, would be like, yes, finally. But you're messing too much with the game, and so you're just like, well, if you're gonna mess with the game, why are we playing at all? And so that's why if I get one positive in the locker room, I'm like, we're shut down for 2 weeks. It's straight up. And sometimes it's going to knock teams out that shouldn't be. And that's just the way that the dice are rolling. But to continue to do this and to have all these games and reschedules to compound on each other, so I mean, it's a problem now. But if you keep going at the same rate we are, it's going to be a much bigger problem when you could have done things better to help quell it a little bit.
There's still some opportunity for the NHL to right the ship, I think, here, besides just trying to have to go, okay, well, here's a guy on the list. All right, let's quarantine, contact, trace. And because it hits home here in Las Vegas, I think it's a reasonable conversation. It's easy to talk about things that aren't in your house,
yeah.
But this is in our house,
yeah.
And it's been in our house for quite a while now. The NHL to pause is possible. They've got to deal with the competitive advantage, though. It's the one thing they're going to have to deal with. It's one for all and all for one. Right. You're going to have to find a way.
So pause, everyone. Cut it to 48 games. Just say, that's it. We're going to take a two-week break. It'll be like a mini Olympic break. And that's what you do. You have that option right now. But if you keep pushing down the road that they are, you might not have that option going forward and wish that you did take that left instead of going right.
I'm advocating for a new set of bubbles.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm pushing, and it's humbly suggest that you rebubble. Yeah. You just rebubble up at this point. There are some places where they're allowing fans in the building. Maybe those are the places where you have the bubbles, where you can still have a few people in the stands or whatever it is.
Right.
Canada's pulling something off right now. Maybe it's just the discipline. Maybe just everybody understands that it's just this thing in Canada that we don't quite understand here, where they have been clean. I mean, it's been incredibly clean there. Here in the States, we're going to have to figure something out with the NHL.
And we need John Tortorella to take over this bad boy.
I'm looking. I would advocate for three bubbles here in the States with each division.
Fully agree. And let the families go. And if the kids have school, then they're not going to come with.
Yeah,
they're veterans.
Well,
they should be able to figure it out anyways.
We're all virtual learning at
exactly.
this point.
Exactly. So that's the thing, though, is like if they're worried about making sure that they get the season in, that they're getting the money that they need to get, well, then you need to protect the product. And you have to have foresight here. And it just seems that they're thinking about their problems in the next 48 hours. I get it. Most of us have to live that way. But you should have people that are thinking 2-3 weeks, a much like grander view. Because if you keep thinking within 48 hours, you're beholden to that. And it's just the same problem over and over and over again. Why am I still bleeding? Well, instead of just putting a Band-Aid on, maybe go get some stitches, dude.
See what the NHL does to try to figure things out. We've offered some suggestions.
Yeah.
Hopefully they'll listen.
Send us a check.
Coming up next, the anthem.
You found the Playmakers on CBS Sports Radio 1140.
Paul and Lindsay with you on this Wednesday afternoon. We do have Nevada Wolfpack Coaches Show at 6 o'clock tonight after an hour of Zach Gelb, so stick around for that. This story developed very quickly throughout the day once everybody figured it out, and then the NBA responded to it quickly, and it seems to be getting swept away very fast. The Dallas Mavericks came out and announced that they had not been playing the national anthem of the United States before home games. They didn't do it for 13 games at their home arena, preseason and regular season.
But nope. We just noticed.
Yeah, someone just finally noticed and made the decision after talking with the NBA commissioner. Everyone just went, oh, yeah. Okay. The NBA came out later in the morning saying, no, all teams will play the United States national anthem before games. And Dallas said, okay, we'll start playing it again.
Right.
The national anthem being played before games goes back to the late 1910s. They started playing it during World Series games. The NFL picked it up in the 60s, and it's just been a thing ever since.
It's a great marketing tool.
It works. In the NBA, they have to be... The NBA, being a progressive organization, is aware of a couple of things. You know, obviously public perception, too, but also, like... Baseball and like soccer is also an international sport. So if you call
hockey
hockey. So if you call for one not to be played, I'm assuming both would not be played in terms of set practices and standards and rewriting the rule books. And I'm all for rewriting the rule books.
Yeah. Just because we've always done something doesn't mean that we should just continue to do it because we've been doing it.
I think for the NBA, I think it was fine for the Dallas Mavericks to not play it. And I think it should be up to the organizations whether or not they should or not. I'm not
their product.
I'm not keen on mandating it being lifted completely from all sporting events, though.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said about like it's. You said it started with the World Series. Well, it's because it's a World Series, Paul. Right? It's a big time deal. But we just play it before all games now, and I got nothing against the national anthem. I got nothing against people kneeling. I got nothing against people standing because everybody is in a different spot. But you can't say that it doesn't provide a conversation piece. And I think that's exactly what Mark Cuban has done here. by this kind of coming out and him addressing and saying, like, we had no plans never to play it again. We had now the fans are coming back in, we're going to start playing it again. But it's about that ongoing conversation about what it stands for and why we make people stand for it, and why that expectation is there. And that kind of blind allegiance. I mean, when I was in school, we had to say the Pledge of Allegiance, I think at least once a week.
Yeah, we said the pledge every day at my high school.
And there's something to be said about just kind of, you have to do this. You have to do this. It's almost like a religious type of thing. And we live in a free country. So, and if people want to draw attention in the ways that they have chosen to, which is kneeling during the national anthem or just not bringing the team out or whatever, like I said, it's a free country. You do you. I think there are big time problems in this country a lot. And I agree with a lot of the same messaging that this is a good platform to call attention to it. And to have these conversations, because it's never going to be done. Because you can't just fix racism, Paul. If we could, some of us probably would have would have been able to by now.
No, I don't believe the national anthem is all about racism.
It's not. But it represents something.
Well, it represents something to a lot of different people.
Exactly.
And that's the constant debate that comes out. Where do I not play the Canadian national anthem if somebody feels that same way? Do I not play the American national anthem at the Olympics? How will it be treated this summer? I think for organizations to choose to do it or to choose not to do it comes with a variety of issues that are compounded well beyond the societal things that we have. Mm-hmm. Every franchise has to deal with some sort of outside influence or some sort of inside influence. Perhaps the owner's family,
sure,
you know, was raised with this tradition based on the fact that, you know, they stood for morning and evening colors because they were raised on a military base. And if you're a military kid, you understand that.
Yeah.
There's also another aspect that a lot of people aren't thinking about, because I remember singing the national anthem at a high school game when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And for a lot of people, the national anthem tryout and to sing said song before these games is the crowning achievement of whatever life they may have lived, because this is the only opportunity they get. And like, mm-hmm, this is their one moment in the spotlight, because they know there's no record deal coming. The sixth grade choir knows that they got invited to this game or
right,
event or whatever it is to sing this thing. So I'm hoping that a guy like Mark Cuban, who did have fans in the past 13 games that were there, provided another outlet for all these people who didn't get to sing said national anthem, or if it was canned, great, or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But for a lot of folks, it is their one moment to, you know, be part of something larger than themselves and
right,
to give them a little shine.
Fair. You can also just like sing the national anthem at home or listen to it at home or on your own time. Because we don't listen to the national anthem before we come on the air. We don't. Most people don't have to say a pledge or anything before they go to their place of work. And that's where it's just like, this is how we have to do things. This is what it represents. Well, that's what it represents to you, not to other people. And if you're asking other people to perform this, not the anthem, but be part of that moment, be part of that, yes, we are representing this message for you. Well, why can't you go get that somewhere else? Right? Because it doesn't affect the product in any way.
No, it's not sports' responsibility whether or not they're going to play the national anthem or not.
Right.
And in a lot of places, it is just performative. I mean, you show up in the arena and, you know, I guarantee you go to a Knights game, even though everybody shouts night, mm-hmm, during the national anthem, which, again, I think if you pulled the anthem from here, I don't know what fans would do with themselves. They'd be like, what am I supposed to do?
Mm-hmm.
At many events, the national anthem kind of sneaks up on you anyway, and you're in the bathroom.
Right.
Or you're in line at the concessions, and everybody pauses for it. It's like, oh, we're not going to sell you this popcorn or hot dog.
Right, but it's not this like holy thing.
No, it's not a holy thing. It's not. So
a lot of us treat it like it is.
I think a lot. Well, and again, you're in a private establishment,
right,
you know, going to buy a hot dog or, you know, hey, if you're not going to sell it to me, you're not going to sell it to me.
Right.
You know, at a certain point, it's not about patriotism or pride, at least in my eyes.
No, it's about me being right.
And again, I'm a military kid. So I totally understand it, and this is what I grew up with. But, mm-hmm, you know, there are some things that are okay to change,
mm-hmm,
and I'm not even about, you know, kneeling or putting your hand over your heart or putting your hands behind your back or saluting. You do you is what it is. This is one of those things, to be honest, I feel needs to be retired.
Yeah. Because it causes a lot of issue for a lot of people. But at the same time, I'm kind of like, well, if we take it away, then do we? Is it one last opportunity to have this conversation? Because it needs to be an ongoing conversation about what's going on in this country, and that's how a lot of people have chosen. But then again, you can find a different way to express that. And so that's where you can't, this, the whole cancel culture thing is that's completely BS, because it's not a real thing. But there's something to be said about having something that you don't necessarily agree with around, just so you do your due diligence about why it's being played and why people do or do not disagree with it. It's all part of like just the public discourse of it. But like you said, this is a private business. And so I agree with you. I think it should be up to each organization. And that means you live and die by whatever consequence that is. Cause there are going to be people that are going to be like, guess what? I'm not going to interact with your product anymore. Okay. And some of them are going to be affected more than others, but it's a free country. What I do with my body and my choices doesn't affect you. So stop trying to pigeonhole people into just going through the motions.
Yeah, a little food for thought more than anything else, but they're going to resume playing the anthem. And I do love me some O Canada too.
Yeah. Canada, Wales.
It's a good one.
It's a good change up. America.
French national anthem's pretty awesome too.
Correct.
The German one. The German one's kind of an oompah.
Yeah, a little more subdued, a little more serious.
Zach Gelb on the way, Nevada Coaches Show at 6 o'clock. For Mark, she's Lindsay, I'm Paul. That's the Playmakers for Wednesday.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.